calculated exactly the equation of motion that is obeyed by the probability density in a Hamiltonian system. It has to the form H rho equals zero, and this means that d rho dt plus the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to q alpha times the derivative with respect to p alpha with a minus sign, plus the derivative with respect to of the Hamiltonian with respect to p alpha d by d q alpha of rho equals zero. P, that's the velocity dividing to the correct signs. And if this is sum over alpha, this is an exact equation. Now, I should admit, I guess, that among other things, I am a mathematician, or at least have had an appointment in a mathematics department. Mathematics textbooks often start out looking somewhat funny from the point of view of physics. For example, one textbook I know starts with the word let. No explanation, no discussion, just the word let. S over K. Well, we're talking probably about the entropy, equal minus rho log rho. This is a definition. And I can put in a term if I wanted to, and I will, although this is sort of what is on Boltzmann's tombstone. But if we use thermodynamics, there is also in there a term like beta times the Hamiltonian. This, too, is presumably exact. One more exact statement that we can make is that we can calculate the differential of rho log rho over E. E being like an e to the x, 2.7 blah, 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 just something which has a logarithm equal to 1. There are several terms in this differential. There is a d rho, and that's multiplied by log rho over E. And then you differentiate this guy, and you get the derivative of rho, that's what cancels out with that, and you get d rho plus sign, and d rho times the logarithm of E cancels against this, and so this is d logarithm rho times rho. So what? Well, I can use this equation, or this equation, to calculate the time derivative of the entropy defined here. And those of you who are quick at calculations can see what the answer is going to be. Those of you who are good at physics may want to guess what the answer will be. So I calculate using this definition, beta being just a number, not depending on anything, using this definition, I calculate the time derivative of s, that's just another number, and what am I going to get f? Anybody here want to guess? This is the entropy of the whole system described by this Hamiltonian. And so we have something going on. What is the time derivative of the entropy that we're going to get?
It should be positive.
It grows. Yes?
Why we do not need to integrate our dp?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your words. Why do I do what?
Why we don't need to integrate to that entropy?
Because, I'm sorry, excuse me. This is going to be, thank you, the integral over everything. Thank you. My rescuer rescued me last time, rescued me this time. Integral over everything. Okay, rescuer. Now that we've got the right thing, maybe we can get the right answer. What's the right answer? We have one answer that it grows. Yes?
Zero.
That's the right answer. How come? Well, you just plug it in. And you calculate. And when you calculate, term by term by term, this term is certainly going to give you zero because the Hamiltonian itself has no time dependence. When you calculate this guy, this is going to be, in fact, the same as the time derivative of this guy. And that, when you do a whole bunch of calculations, turns out to be the Poisson bracket of rho with some function of rho, and the Poisson bracket of rho with any function of rho is zero. Sit down and do it for yourself. It's easy enough to do. So with this definition, the time derivative of the entropy is zero. Okay, well, classical mechanics is a kludge. We know it's really, the world is really quantum mechanical, and we know that really the world is defined by S over K is minus the trace sum over all possible states of rho log rho. And maybe we ought to put in the plus beta h. And maybe what we ought to do is then calculate using the proper equation of motion for the density in quantum mechanics, IH d rho dt plus rho comma Hamiltonian, this being the commutator, is equal to zero. And so we stick in and start to calculate. Well, did that. I've got notes on it, so let me look at my notes. You know what I'm going to tell you now. It's not a big secret. I'm going to tell you that quantum mechanically also that okay, let's get that up. No, I think you'll have to get the blackboard to work. So, I calculate the time derivative using quantum mechanics of rho log rho divided by E. That's essentially the same as calculating the time derivative of rho if we're going to get... Let me start out by doing a simple calculation in which I calculate I h bar, the d by dt of the trace of rho. Well, that's easy. That's the, that is equal to the minus sign because of the, this is a plus sign here, of the trace of rho times h. And with a minus sign, that is, well, this is a trace. First, you get a rho squared times h, because this is a commutator. And then you get an h rho h. And then you remember that you can use the identity that trace AB is identical to trace BA, and that's equal to zero. And you do this calculation, and it's the same blessed calculation except that you have a logarithm of rho lying around in it, and you get something which is equally zero.
Leo, what is A defined here?
This h is the Planck's constant divided by 2 pi. This h is the Hamiltonian in quantum mechanics. And I'm not sure I understood the question, but I answered two questions which might have been connected.
No, you, okay, so you divide the log of rho divided by e. What is the e that you specify
in
your derivative?
As in e to the x.
Okay,
it's 2.73
so
blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay.
It has the property, it is stuck in here so that we can get this thing equal to that thing. I'm sorry. So that we can get that thing equal to... log rho times the derivative of rho. That's what that E is doing here. It's an integrator. It enables you to integrate this expression to get that. Thank you for asking the question. Yes?
How did we obtain that rho in the bottom line? Like when we write time derivative trace is equal to trace of this?
We took I h d rho dt. And I'm just now calculating thank you for rescuing me again. Again, it doesn't, the argument is the same. Let me assume I had calculated that, which is the IH times rho squared, except for a factor of 2, it's the same calculation. Thank you. Too sleepy this morning. The argument is that the time derivative of any function of rho is either because of the commutator structure or because of the Poisson bracket structure. Any function of rho alone has a time derivative which is zero, including rho log rho, which means that the entropy has a time derivative which is zero. And will you guys get me to... That's true under the trace in the quantum context, and it's true under this integration in the classical context. Will you guys get me organized so I'm doing the right stuff, I get the right answer. And the right answer is quite surprising. The right answer is that either classically defined or quantum mechanically defined, the entropy has a time derivative, which is zero. Now you guys are going to give me a Gedanken experiment in a moment. You're going to imagine that I take a room and that I take a wall in the middle of the room and I put air on this side of the wall and then I put a leak and the air leaks off to the other side. And then you're going to tell me that you know that the entropy increases when that happens, don't you? Well, the entropy does increase, I guess, despite this calculation or this calculation. What happens is the molecules come out and swirl around in here, but the place where you lose information, the place where you get something, where you in fact have the entropy increase, is when these molecules swirling around bounce off against the walls of the chamber. And if there were no walls of the chamber, that entropy increase would not happen. But if there were no walls of the chamber, I wouldn't have this same picture. And the story would be different. The entropy increase occurs because of exchanges between a subsystem and the outside world. You guys know that from your thermodynamics, that T, dS, is dE, an exchange with the outside world, plus PdV, an exchange of momentum with the outside world. P, as you recall, comes from the stress tensor, which is a current from momentum. This term is an exchange of energy with the outside world. This term is an exchange of momentum with the outside world. Exchanges with the outside change the entropy. Nothing that happens within the system is going to change the entropy. That's what this argument is about. In Alice in Wonderland, written incidentally by a mathematician, this is a children's book. However, it has a certain amount of wisdom in it. And the Red Queen, a character in the book, advises Alice, the heroine of the book, that she ought to practice by believing two impossible things before breakfast. Well, you guys have had your breakfast, but I have given you two impossible things. In classical mechanics, the entropy never increases for an isolated system. In quantum mechanics, the entropy never increases for an isolated system. And there it is, exactly true. Yes? Because of the formula from thermodynamics, or rather, you remember I said that the partition function, which is e to the s over k minus beta times e. So this is more or less the sum over states. So I said s over k should be more or less log z plus beta times e. But you could probably shouldn't put it in. So let's not put it in. The story is the same. We add any conserved quantities to the entropy or not. You can do as you wish. The entropy is equally conserved with this definition or just that definition. Yes?
Just to be sure, in the quantum mechanics, should the derivative with respect to time be a total one?
There's nothing else, so it's got to be a total one, I guess. What we have is rho of t, depending on nothing else, is the trace. Rho of t is just psi, if you have a single state. And I guess this depends on t, and so there's nothing else. So it's a total derivative. It should be a total derivative. Thank you. In quantum mechanics, in classical mechanics, it equally well should be a total derivative because we've integrated out over all the other coordinates. I'm having a tough morning. I can see that. I hope to do better on the Boltzmann equation. On the other hand, everything I told you is true. when you guys fix it up. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Well, what if H has explicit time dependence? I mean, we assume that H is not time dependent, but if it's time dependent, then...
You don't have to assume it, or rather. For an isolated system, we write down a field theoretic expression for the, say, the Lagrangian. From that, you could get an expression for the Hamiltonian, say. Or you write down an expression for the Hamiltonian to begin with. And that expression has no time dependence in it. Or rather, let's... For example, if you have classical mechanics, the Hamiltonian is the sum over j, pj squared over 2m, plus some v of rj minus rk. Mass of particle doesn't change in time. The potential between particles don't change in time. You now calculate, using the laws of quantum mechanics or classical mechanics, the time derivative of the Hamiltonian. This is the partial derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to time, which is zero, plus the commutator, with whatever sign it happens to have, of the Hamiltonian with itself, which is zero. Zero plus zero is equal to zero. Any expression that you write down for the Hamiltonian, which has no explicit time written in it, you then take the equations for classical mechanics or quantum mechanics. In classical mechanics, this is a Poisson bracket. In quantum mechanics, it's you've got an I and an H bar. But you have a commutator, and it's just zero. That is the deep statement that if you have no explicit time dependence, the energy does not change in time. It is analogous to the statement, which is the special relativistic partner of that one, that if you have no explicit position dependence in your definition of anything, if this potential depends only on differences, you have the momentum conserved also. There is no change in the momentum in time. Nonetheless, Boltzmann goes out and derives an equation for the entropy, which has the change, has the entropy changing in time. I will want to follow Boltzmann's logic and do that. What Boltzmann writes an equation for is f of p, r, and t. This is a one-particle distribution function. It tells you the number of particles you have in the interval of momentum dp, the interval of position dr around p and r. It gives you information about one particle at a time. The actual, this f is n times rho of r and t, p, r, and t. However, the rho from which you get no change in entropy is not just a function of one coordinate and one momentum. It is the function of all of the coordinates and all of the momentum. This thing is simpler. It is looking at the particles one at a time and has no correlation between the particles built into it. Boltzmann looks at the equation for this one-particle distribution function. He says that to a first approximation, let us leave out the interactions among the particles. Therefore, we will describe the particles by having a single particle energy, P, R, and T. This might be P squared over 2m plus u. The velocity of the particle will be the gradient of this guy in momentum. And then you will get from the relations that I wrote down before that the time derivative of f comes about because the particle is moving with this velocity. That motion will change r, and that produces a change in f. There's also an effect of the particle being accelerated by the forces in the system. The forces are the gradient p of epsilon of p, r, and t. This is then what you get from the fact that the particle is being accelerated by the forces. The particle is moving in through space. And then Boltzmann says that this is going to end up being some collision terms. Gradient, thank you. Tough morning. The words I gave you were more or less correct. This is the acceleration produced by the forces on the particle. That changes the momentum, and you get gradient p. Thank you. Who was my hero here who corrected me this time? Thank you. With some help from my friends, I will get things right. Or rather, I will get them wrong, but we'll get them right eventually. Thank you. Collision terms. Okay, I have to draw pictures to go with the collision terms, and the pictures will look like this. Here is a region of space in which collisions are happening. Here is our friendly particle with momentum p coming into that region of space. It meets up with another particle with momentum q. They collide with one another. This guy comes off with some other momentum called P prime. This guy comes off with some other momentum called Q prime. That reduces the number of particles with momentum P. So this collision term has a minus sign because this process of collision reduces the number of particles with momentum P. You are looking at all of these processes at once, so you are integrating over all possible momenta that you might have for the colliding particle. You're integrating between over all possible stuff going out. And then you have a probability that you're going to find a particle with momentum P that is going to be proportional to F of P, R, and T. You have the probability that you're going to find a particle with momentum Q, that's F of Q, R, and T, because these particles are colliding at a point R or in a region R and at a time T. And then you have another factor, which I will call, see what I called it in the notes. You have a collision rate, which is another factor which I call capital Q of P and Q going into P prime and Q prime. That is one possible kind of collision that can occur. This is the rate at which it occurs. It is proportional, and I'm just saying it again, to the integration over all of the things that can happen. To the probabilities we can find the two guys around who do the job, and to a collision rate. This collision rate is something that I might calculate from classical mechanics. It is also something that I might calculate from quantum mechanics. In quantum mechanics, it will be proportional to the differential cross-section for this process. In classical mechanics, it would be some integration over forces, whatever it is, Q will come out to have a form in which it depends on these four momenta. Let's do the back first, and then I'll move forward. Green shirt, please.
Well, I didn't understand. Why we do not integrate over P?
Because I'm looking at this guy. My friend with momentum P is scattering. The number of guys with momentum P is reduced because of that scattering. That's what I'm talking about. Further forward.
What's your definition for this Q capital?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Well,
how do you define this decay rate? For,
how do I define this Q?
Yeah.
I I will give you an impolite answer and then a polite one. The impolite answer is that I copied it out of Boltzmann's book. The polite answer is that I have to do a big deal calculation. Depending on the forces in the system, either classically or quantum mechanically. In quantum mechanics, I calculate the differential cross-section for the process involved. I multiply that differential cross-section by a delta function for energy conservation, a delta function for momentum conservation. I then put in a velocity of which the particles are approaching one another, a velocity proportional to P minus Q. That's what I do in quantum mechanics. In classical mechanics, I follow the trajectories of the particles as they enter this region. I look at the forces produced because of this potential as they go through that region. That force transfers some momentum from one particle to another. I then calculate in detail how that transfer occurs, and I get out some answer. All that is hidden in this cube. I don't have an explicit answer for Q until I give you an explicit form for the potential, and
so
I'm not giving you that.
This represents the probability that this P and Q will produce P dash and
that's a probability. It's a probability that will happen. And I don't have to specify much about it, except that it's bigger than zero and less than infinity. And the rest of the calculation will go through with a few additional assumptions, which I will show you in detail. But that's not all that goes on. There is also a sort of backward process. A process in which particles with momentum P prime comes in, bangs against a particle with momentum Q prime in a region of space labeled by R and the time T, and out comes a particle with momentum P and another particle with momentum Q. This process increases the number of guys with momentum P. That makes F bigger, so I will put a plus sign in. I then say that the rate at which this occurs is first of all proportional to an integration over all the guys that are participating, dq prime, dp prime, dq. A number of guys with q prime and p prime, F of P prime R and T, F of Q prime R and T, and then a rate for this process, so-called inverse process, the process going on in the opposite direction. That is a process in which P prime and Q prime go into P and Q. And if I were doing the same calculation quantum mechanically, I might put down an integration over densities of states here, which is integration over Q divided by 2 pi h bar cubed. But it's all the same thing. Those extra factors of 2 pi h bar cubed would be absorbed in this capital Q. Yes, question?
Yeah, the first one is quick. Do we assume that it's elastic collision?
I didn't understand the question. I assume that there are collisions going on both in this direction and that direction. And so far, I haven't assumed anything about the structure of Q except that it exists and is positive.
Okay, so why do we take, like, at the same point of the space the two processes to happen?
The place that it happens is the place I'm looking at, right here. So imagine we have this, let me say a few words and maybe we can, imagine I have this gas. It's filled with particles. I look right there. That's the place R. And I notice these two guys are coming at each other. They're going to collide. It's a sort of rare event. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. It's a low density gas. There are collisions going on, and it's the rate of collisions is proportional to the probability of finding guys at exactly the same place in space and time, and that's proportional in term to two products of product of two Fs.
Yeah, the point is, we're talking about classically. Classically, how do we assume that we will
like have at the same point and that at the same time that B and Q will collide and give us B dash,
but
Q dash, and
if two particles collide, they are at the same point.
At the same time,
yeah.
Both the forces happen.
Yeah.
And this is
that's a collision.
Collisions occur sometimes. There's no question about that. The air, think of the air in this room. The molecules are bouncing around, and once in every 10 to the minus 7 centimeters of motion, they come and get close enough to one another so they feel the force exerted by one another. This is not literally exactly a point in space. I drew it as a region. But this is a region in which collisions occur. And Boltzmann says we can estimate how many collisions occur by looking at these probabilities for guys arriving at almost the same place, and then multiplying by some probability factor called Q. This is Boltzmann's assumption. It is a reasonable assumption. It is likely to be true, and it is exactly the same thing done classically or quantum mechanically. If I did this same calculation quantum mechanically, I know how to do it. I take the particles and I get them to come in together. I use what is called Fermi's golden rule, which calculates the rate is proportional to the wave function squared of the particle, which is then tells me the probability. I'm going to find the guy. A lady will come bouncing into this room, all worried if I don't put that back on. I'll put it on a not so good place. But I'll talk a little lower, and then it will be okay. I could do the same calculation quantum mechanically. I would use a wave packet. I would use the golden rule. I would do something with cross sections. But I get an answer which looks exactly like that, and I would get something with collision probabilities in it. I claim, it's distinct from what I did there, what I did here was correct, and I ask you to accept it and go on. Might I ask for that? Now I'm going to make two more assumptions, and maybe three more assumptions, and I will be all done. I will have a calculation which will enable me to make predictions. Come on, what are you guys work? What? Okay, that's fine. So what's this guy? This guy is this one. No? That one? No, it isn't anyone at all. Okay. Doesn't matter much. I'm going to make roughly three more assumptions. I'm going to make an assumption that is called detailed balance. Basically, an assumption about time reversal invariance. P, a probability of going forward, is equal to the probability of going backward. This is called detailed balance. I used the same words for something slightly different before, but you will see that it has the same physical content. This says that what happens in this direction and what happens in the opposite direction has the same rate. It will then give us a consequence which will have the other detailed balance statement.
Is it true?
Is it true, actually, or not?
Not in the presence of a magnetic field. In a magnetic field, the particles curve around and something more complicated happens. In the absence of a magnetic field, yes, it's true. It's essentially parity invariance. Parity says that if you flip the sign of any vector, you get the same probability of the thing happening. And all I've basically done is flip the sign of vectors. No, I flip the sign of the time dependence. It is CPT probably. It is true with the absence of a magnetic field. A magnetic field, a more complicated thing, but an analogous thing happens. Besides, Alice was told what to do. Believe. Yes, it's true. For in the absence of a magnetic field. This gives me the opportunity, indeed the necessity, of rewriting the Boltzmann equation, which I'm going to do. But before doing that, I'm going to point out to you that we also have energy and momentum conservation. That this process has some rate associated with RPQ, goes into P prime, Q prime, but that this stuff is non-zero only if you have P plus Q equal to P prime plus Q prime. And if you have the energy conserved in the process, epsilon P plus epsilon Q equal epsilon P prime minus epsilon Q prime. If if you have these conservation laws, the process will have a non-zero rate. Otherwise, the process will have a zero rate. There is one more statement which I will need for momentum conservation and energy conservation in the system. It's also needed for proving the entropy, but I won't need it in the most immediate way. And that is that these two kinds of particles are the same. That the rate of scattering of P and Q is the same as the rate of scattering of Q prime and P prime. I didn't say the right thing. P and Q are the same kind of particle. So the rate of scattering using these variables is the same as the rate of scattering interchanging the variables. This is basically the same kind of particle. I will make one more change as I rewrite the equation. But that change as I rewrite the equation is just a notation. Instead of writing F of P, R, and T, every time I have something to write down, I will write this as F of P and hide the R and T. Okay, so I'm about to rewrite the equation. Using this capital R as my basic variable, putting in these delta functions, using this simpler notation, for F. With the exception of the simpler notation, this is directly copied out of Boltzmann's book. Not that I read Boltzmann's book in German, but there's a good English translation by Dover of a book called Gas Theory. So I'm about to rewrite this equation when I find a blackboard that will enable me to do it. Having a little trouble today, I'm not quite sure why.
That's right.
Oh, that's trouble's all over. Way over here on the left-hand side of the equation, I write dt plus gradient p epsilon dot gradient r plus gradient, rather minus, gradient p, gradient r epsilon dot gradient p. And then f of p, r, and t, but no r and t, equals integrations over variables dp prime, dq prime, dq. A scattering rate now called R. R multiplies both of these terms. So I just write it down here. P, Q goes into P prime, Q prime. A bunch of delta functions, p plus q minus p prime minus q prime. That's momentum conservation. Energy conservation, epsilon p plus epsilon q minus epsilon p prime minus epsilon q prime. And now the factors which tell us how often things occur because of the number of guys around. F of P, R, and T produces the scattering from P and Q into P prime and Q prime. Scattering off of F of Q. The scattering in the opposite sense has a minus sign and comes from P prime and Q prime into P and Q. And this is the equation, so this is the famous Boltzmann equation. Now, well, it's not exactly obvious, but now I can tell you what the solution to this equation is, what the equilibrium solution is. The equilibrium solution is just what Maxwell and Boltzmann said it should be. F of P, R, and T is E to the minus beta times E, epsilon. There'll be a little bit more to it before we're done, but let's look at this. No time dependent, well, I'll put a Z in. I claim no time dependence. This term is zero. We're looking at an equilibrium solution. This is the Poisson bracket of F with epsilon, and that the Poisson bracket of epsilon with any function of itself is zero. So this part of the equation is zero. Here we have e to the minus beta times epsilon p. from this term plus epsilon q from this term divided by z squared. You can see where we're going. We have a minus sign, e to the minus beta times epsilon p prime plus epsilon q prime divided by z squared from that there. Big bracket around this and an equal to zero sign because energy conservation demands that this is that and then everything else is the same on both sides of the minus sign. So that detailed balancing condition, which enabled us to write a factor of Q or R multiplying everything, produces this detailed balance condition, saying that in order to have a probability of having a energy, having something with momentum P, it costs us a probability e to the minus beta epsilon P, and that appears there. As distinct from the nasty stuff that occurred in the first 20 minutes of the lecture, for which I humbly apologize, this, I claim, is clear, direct, straightforward, simple, and unavoidable. Boltzmann's equation leads to the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution without any nonsense. In fact, it leads to something slightly more general, and I'll tell you more general stuff. Or maybe you'll tell me more general stuff. I could put a plus P dot V, where V is a velocity into the equation, into the result. I'd have an epsilon P plus P dot V there, plus Q dot V there, plus P prime dot V there, plus Q prime dot V there. And because of the momentum conservation, those factors would then give us the same thing on the two sides of the minus sign. I'm not going to rewrite it here, but I claim that we got this, these factors as being here because of the existence of the energy conservation law. The conventional sign is a minus sign. We'll put the minus sign in. And you can then get P multiplying any arbitrary three-component vector, V, here. And so I better tell you a little more about this. This says that for any value of the temperature, e to the minus beta times epsilon P is an equilibrium solution of the Boltzmann equation. That's true. Because of this delta function. This says that because of this delta function, P dot V may also be added to the solution. And the physics of that is that we can have the whole system moving with an average velocity V. A little bit of calculation shows that these terms give you no non-zero result if you add the P dot V in. In fact, if we had more stuff conserved, and you can imagine more things conserved, you can imagine various kinds of different particles being conserved, and so on and so forth, we get one parameter in the solution for each conservation. Okay, let's count them out. Beta is the parameter that corresponds to the energy. V is the parameter that corresponds to the momentum conservation. Z, which could be anything at all, is the parameter which corresponds to number or probability conservation. This collision conserves the number of particles before and after the collision. We now have a full equilibrium solution of the Boltzmann equation. With, I claim, no mistakes. It's less fun with the no mistakes. But I claim no mistakes. In fact, this is not sort of the most, this is close to the most general full equilibrium solution, but there is something more than we could say. We could imagine that we have slow variation of space and time. That is, the time derivatives and the space derivatives are all kind of small. Then the left-hand side of the equation has to be small. And then in order to make the equation work, we have to have the right-hand side of the equation small. So we can have, this is an exact solution, so we can have an approximate solution. With beta being some function of r and t, velocity being some function of r and t, the normalizing factor z being some function of r and t. And we could work with that. We'll come back to that. That's what you, how you get out the heat equation, the equation for the diffusion equation for viscosity, the sound wave equation for the system. We will come back to that, but now I want to talk about conservation laws. I'm going to take this Boltzmann equation, and I'm going to use it to derive what the consequence of the conservation laws are for this function of p, r, and t. The conservation laws have consequences, and those consequences are what I'm going to get next. Now I'm going to do conservation laws. We expect equations like the time derivative of the mass density, rho, plus the divergence of the current, which describes the flow of mass through the system, equal to zero, be to be consequences of the Boltzmann equation. And we expect to be able to derive them from the Boltzmann equation. In fact, Boltzmann did that kind of analysis, and I'll show you how to do it. So take this Boltzmann equation and integrate it over all p. We had integrations over the three of the four variables here, but not over the fourth. And now we're going to do an integration over the fourth variable of the entire Boltzmann. And I will work through the equation from the left, term by term, in order to see the consequences of that. The first consequence is very easy and will tell us where we're going. We get the integral dp of f of t, r and t, time derivative, as the first term from here. That is the density of particles, this integral over p, in the neighborhood of the space-time point r and t. So we're going in the right direction to get this. Now we just have to get simple stuff from the rest of the equation in order to get good things going on. So I integrate this term. Here I have a gradient with respect to p of epsilon dotted into a div dot r. And for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to assume that the gradient r of epsilon of p, r, and t equals 0. That is a no-force assumption. If epsilon were p squared over 2m plus u of r, what I'm basically assuming is that there is no u of r. So I take the integral over all p of this guy. By the assumption I have made, this term is 0, so I don't have to worry about it. Then I'm integrating these terms over all four momenta. When you integrate these terms over all four momenta, you're calculating the same thing both times, except for the minus sign. From this term you're calculating the total scattering rate of particles with momentum p. From the thing that got buried back here, because I didn't do the blackboards right. Still not doing the blackboards right. What's going on here? Okay, I see what I'm looking for now. Let's work on it. That thing up there describes the total scattering rate of particles with momentum p prime against particles with momentum q prime if we integrate over everything. This thing over here describes the total scattering rate of particles with momentum p against particles with momentum q, integrated over everything. Total scattering rate is the same as total scattering rate. These two terms exactly cancel one another, and you get 0 from the right-hand side of the Boltzmann equation. Here, I can take the derivative with respect to r outside of the integration. this term becomes the time derivative of a reasonable description of the density of particles at the space-time point r and t. This term becomes the divergence, div dot, like this div dot, integral dt of the velocity gradient p of epsilon, that's p over m, which is the velocity, times f of p, r, and t. And this says that we have a conservation law in which the time derivative of the density of particles is produced because of the divergence of the current in the system. To get the conservation law for momentum, you multiply the Boltzmann equation by p, and you integrate dp. It's a long song and dance, and I won't go through it. It may end up on your homework, but what you get from this term is the time derivative of the momentum density. This term gives you the current of momentum, which is the stress tensor. This term gives you the average force on the thing, which is the force that comes from outside to change the momentum in the system. And after some song and dance, this delta function in the momentum, along with the condition on Q, which I think is now hidden, which says, no, that condition is not hidden, along with this condition on Q, the one above, the one at the top, gives cancellation of the various stuff here, and you end up with a momentum conservation law. You end up with a law that the time derivative of the momentum density plus the divergence of the stress tensor is equal to the force from outside, or the force density from outside. I'm going to do a calculation which is not dissimilar to that, but has more consequences for us. I'm going to multiply this equation by log f and then be calculating what Boltzmann called the time derivative of h and what we know is going to be equivalent to the minus the time derivative of the entropy. Before I do that calculation, I should point out to you why we expect to get a non-zero result from that calculation. F does not represent everything in this system. F represents only a partial amount of information about a little bit about what you do when you look at the particles one at a time and add them up. F has no information whatsoever about the correlation amongst the particles. Furthermore, this equation, unlike the exact equations, does not have time reversal invariance. On the left-hand side, this time derivative flips sign when we flip the sign of time. There is no time to flip sign here. If we flip the sign of momentum, which is we could do, That still doesn't flip any signs on the right-hand side. This equation is not invariant under time reversal invariance. This equation describes information that gets lost in the course of the calculation. The two particles which scattered against one another here had very correlated motion as they came in. They had to in order to get close enough to one another to scatter. After they scatter, they go off into the soup and get lost. We only know something about their individual probability. We don't know anything about the correlation that they have, and especially we don't know anything about the correlation they acquired in the course of getting scattered off of one another. That is even more true quantum mechanically. Quantum mechanically, when they scatter off of one another, they acquire a phase in their wave, the relative phase in their wave functions. That information about the phase doesn't appear any place in the argument, doesn't appear any place in the calculation. That information just isn't there. So we expect that this Boltzmann equation has no time reversal invariance. This expectation gave people in the late 19th century all kinds of trouble. Boltzmann claimed when he wrote down the equation that it was exact. That's not true. It's not an exact statement. It's only a very good approximation for a gas. Then various people, including Mach and others, said this cannot be correct. This doesn't agree with time reversal invariance. And Boltzmann was annoyed and embarrassed and finally had to admit that yes, it does not agree with time reversal invariance. It cannot be exactly exact. It is, however, close to the best information we have on what goes on in a gas and represents very well what goes on in the gas. And this partial information is the right way to think about many of the things that happen in the gas. So the fact that including the fact that entropy increases as time goes on. In any case, we're going to go ahead and do the calculation. I'm going to start with a tiny bit of the calculation now, and then I will continue doing the calculation next time. Next time being next week. What I'm going to do is take this equation and multiply it by the logarithm of f. So I multiply the entire equation by the log of f and integrate over momentum. And I'm looking for a good place to do that. I'm going to take this equation and multiply by log f, and I'm only going to look now at this term. So I'm integrating dp, logarithm of f of p, r, and t. The derivative with respect to time of f of p, r, and t. To my embarrassment, I got this kind of calculation wrong at the beginning of this class. I now will state correctly what happens. This is the integral dp of the time derivative of f logarithm of f divided by e, e being the base of exponentials. How do I know that? Well, I calculate this explicitly. First, I calculate on here, and I get dt f times the logarithm of f over e. Then I calculate on here. The derivative of logarithm of f gives me a 1 over f, derivative with respect to time of f, and I have this f left over, which is f. I now collect up factors. This is equal to dt f times the logarithm of f over e, but that's the logarithm of f minus the logarithm of e, which is 1. 1 over f cancels that f, so I get plus dt f times 1 again, except I shouldn't write dt f twice. I should just write 1 there. And this then becomes the integral of dt f times log f, which is what I started with. So on the left-hand side of the equation, I get, by multiplying this equation by log f, I get the time derivative of the integral dp of f of p, r, and t times the logarithm of f of p, r, and t divided by the base of exponentials. And this is what Boltzmann called dth. And that's what we're going to calculate next time. So have a nice weekend. I will field any questions now. Next time, we calculate the time derivative of h, and we find that this is a greater than or equal to 0 always, and is distinct from the honest-to-goodness entropy of the entire universe, which does not change. This thing is minus the entropy, and in fact, it goes down in as, h. I'm back to where I was at the beginning of the lecture. The sign that comes out of this calculation is less than or equal to 0. This thing is minus the entropy and uniformly decreases in time because the entropy of the gas uniformly increases in time. Questions or comments? Okay. Have a nice weekend.